Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today we bring you three bands in one. We're talking about the band Underworld, which I'd previous to this listen had said, would have said that there was an Underworld 1.0 and an Underworld 2.0. But you actually made a really good point that there's really an Underworld, you know, it's more of a beta.
Yeah, it was a beta test.
It's a beta. We'll talk about that as we get into their library and their music. I'm really going to start off by saying that this is one I was looking forward to because I'm a big fan of Underworld beta 1.0 and 2.0. But I was surprised how much of their stuff I hadn't listened to. And it was going through the list that we had of their library to make me realize, oh, there's actually a couple albums that I didn't even know existed. And one of my favorite songs actually came from that album. So I'm really, really excited to talk about today.
I was also super impressed with how much work they've done in film and in soundtrack work too. That was surprising to me.
Yeah. And really, I mean, it's Carl Hyde is kind of the big central guy that's behind all this. Let's talk about this because these guys formed in Cardiff, Wales by Carl Hyde and Rick Smith. They have a long list of former members, including Darren Emerson, Darren Price. They really like Darren's apparently. Gary Bond, Steve Irwin, Not the Crocodile Hunter, Chris Bell, and others.
Wouldn't it be funny if it had been the Crocodile Guy?
It would have been great. Oh, just one more thing to add to the tragedy of the loss of Steve Irwin was the fact that his contributions to Underworld.
Your first album would have been Crikey.
Crikey by Underworld, yes. By the way, this is another band that I got educated on. It's not the Underworld, it's just Underworld. And I've been calling him the Underworld for a long time. I might have even said the Underworld at the top of the show, but in any case, it's just Underworld, not the Underworld.
Isn't the Underworld the movie about vampires and werewolves?
I think that's Underworld as well. One with Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah,
weird SEO. The lichens and stuff. Yeah. I think that's just plain Underworld as well.
Some weird SEO when you're trying to put this together today.
The Underworld was a women's underwear shop in the old Villa Italia shopping mall that has been raised and rebuilt.
Really?
I think so. I think we had a local women's underwear retail store called The Underworld.
Okay. I'm not one to stop the show mid-breath here, but that sounds like the ultimate idea for a sitcom set in the 70s.
Oh, like a wait, you mean the shopping mall or
no, just working, the store.
Like the store would be the central.
Yes, the store would be the main. It's like Cheers.
Gotcha. Right.
And you'd have a bunch of women and maybe one guy working there, and it would just be this sitcom about that store and those people.
I think that's a funny idea. I mean, you could even, it doesn't have to be 70s because I'm thinking that stuff like, I almost said Veronica's Closet, which was a sitcom, Victoria's Secret, you know, that those stores opened up in the 80s, yeah, and early 90s.
I think having it set in the 70s leans it to more awkward, funny, because people talk about underwear all the time now. So you need to take it back to a time where those kind of things were the unmentionables.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be as funny because we do talk about underwear now, right?
That's true. Yeah, I guess you're right. See, look at you punching holes in my good idea.
Sorry. It's, just consider me the cranky movie producer who flattens every idea pitch that comes his way. Back to Underworld, the two founding members began their partnership in 1979 with a Kraftwerk / reggae inspired project called the Screen Gems. And that's with a Z. Later, they formed an electro clash.
Yeah. I was going to say in 1979, too, that's a preview that I left out for next week.
Oh, yeah, it's a good point. Right. You'll find out more about that later on in the show, too. Later on, they formed an electroclash new wave band that didn't have a name, but the name was just a squiggle. And later they gave that squiggle the pronunciation of Frewer. In 1983, Frewer released their one and only album. It was called Doot Doot. As a title track or named after their biggest song. They were signed to CBS and released in 1983. There was a follow-up album recorded but not released. The road.
This was the first in three, like Brian said, very distinctive sounds of the band.
Yeah.
And I think it shows a level of creativity being pushed and them unwilling to settle for a sound. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the driving factor for what's actually kept them alive and relevant since 1979.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think that there's a, while these three eras of Underworld, and we're counting the Frewer era, mm-hmm. I call it the Beta because it was only one album. It kind of set the stage for what was going to be happening later. And I think if Frewer would not have done well, and that apparently that song Doot Doot did pretty well in the UK. If it hadn't done well, there might not be an Underworld 1.0 or of course an Underworld 2.0.
Two other things I wanted to add.
Yeah.
Runaway, one of the songs on that album, mm-hmm. had this really dated 80s sexy sax sound.
Sure.
But also vocally sounded a lot like Howard Jones.
Mm-hmm. I think you could say that even with Doot Doot as well. Carl Hyde has, to me, a little bit of a Danny Elfman quality to his voice. He's got a little bit of a Howard Jones quality to his voice for sure.
And the last thing is the name is actually pulled from a movie that Clive Barker wrote, which was scored by Frewer.
Oh, really? So Doot Doot was a... Or Underworld is from a movie?
I think Underworld.
Okay, good. Because Doot Doot would be a horrible horror movie name.
Yeah, I don't think Clive Barker would stoop to Doot Doot.
In a world where a killer is on the loose,
Doot Doot,
you'll be at the edge of your seat doot, watching Doot Doot.
I think the only thing closest Clive Barker's come to that is wiping Doot Doot off his feet.
Oh, geez. Oh, you mean Hellraiser 5?
Yeah.
In 1987, the members of Frewer formed a new band called Underworld.
Oh, and that's where that note should have gone.
Yeah, well, and it is right next to that. It is right next to that line, so I didn't think to stop it.
Oh, yeah, boy.
Yeah. This project was more of a guitar-focused sound, very much in the new wave style, of course, of the 80s. And they were signed to Sire Records, also a really good place for them. I think that's where like bands like Depeche Mode, oh my God, why am I blanking on names here? I've seen them in concert. It's I Touch Roses. What was one of their big hits? Not Susie and the Banshees. Ah, forget it. Forget it. I can't remember their name. No, it was an all-female band. Book of Love.
Oh, right.
Book of Love was a member of, was on Sire Records.
Didn't Sire Records also release the Just Say series?
They did.
Say Mao.
And that's actually how the Just Say Yes, Just Say Mao, Just Say Yesterday. These were all like good ways to discover all these other underground bands from Sire Records. And it's actually one of my favorite bands at the time was a band called Figures on a Beach. If we ever decide to do, if we do another, did I make you listen to Figures on a Beach? I don't think I did. I'm trying to remember if I did for one of the, you got to listen to this is, I might make you listen to one of the Figures on a Beach albums, but the problem is it's like, I'd want you to listen to 2/3 of each of their two albums. I'd have to we'll have to figure out you got to listen to this where I can.
Like a playlist.
Stretch the rules a little bit, but that's how I discovered them. They're one of their biggest hits. In relative scale to the other things that were out at the time, was a song called No Stars, and it was on the Just Say Yes, the very first of the Just Say series.
That's how I discovered Echo and the Bunnymen and Ofer Shahari and...
Who?
The Oprah, what's her name?
Oprah Haase?
Oprah Haase, yeah.
Oprah Winfrey? What?
I'm like editing already.
No, you can't. You gotta leave all this in. Are you kidding me? This is gold, baby. It's gold. In 1988, Underworld released Underneath the Radar. This was a pretty big success for them. Reached 139 on the Billboard 200. And they recorded the album in one single continuous take.
Appearances, the band would play the entire album in sequence to promote the album, which
that's amazing.
Can you imagine getting on, like, I don't know, Saturday Night Live, and they're like, how long do you need for Underneath the Radar? 43 minutes.
Right. Yeah, no kidding. Well, the, you know, what's the band? Yaz did this. Mm-hmm, when they only had one band, one album upstairs at Eric's, they played the entire album back to front for concerts. They might have changed the order of the songs. I can't remember. Then they closed with like a dance mix version of Don't Go. It was great. Mm-hmm. Or Situation or something. It's so, so cool. Just the fact that they recorded their album in one single continuous take. I just saw the movie 1917, and this is kind of like the album equivalent of doing that, which is amazing.
Oh, wow.
It also saves you a lot of money on a studio time.
Unless you have to do it like five times.
Well, that's true. And by the way, for clarity, 1917 looks like a movie that was filmed in one continuous take, but it's really a bunch of like 8 to 10 minute sections that have all been stitched together really well to make it look like it's all one continuous shot. Incredible movie, by the way. 1989, the band released Change the Weather. Stand Up was released as a single, which was the band's biggest hit. It peaked at number 69 on the Hot 100. This version of the band broke up in 1990, and this is thought of as a separate project by the members of the band. And I mentioned how Carl has a Danny Elfman sound to his voice. The band actually has kind of a Oingo Boingo sound on this album, on Change the Weather. It's kind of a combination of Carl's vocals, but also the drums and horns and guitar work. It just feels like it's very, very Oingo Boingo. They took a bit of a break to focus on an art project called Tomato. And then Carl Hyde and Rick Smith brought in a DJ named Darren Emerson, and they formed the trio Underworld, which was basically Mark II.
Yeah, it was funny because as I transitioned into this, I got a little nervous just because of what I knew was coming.
Yeah.
So we'll get more into that. This is where the trepidation started.
So you went in a little nervous. I wonder if that had an effect. Like if you wouldn't have already been worried about what was coming after the two pop albums.
Well, I had heard hints of it from you.
Yeah.
Like they're completely different.
Yeah.
Get ready for it. And I'll the next section really hard. I had songs that I had picked.
Yeah.
And then we talked, and I'm sure we'll talk about it later. And then I did something else.
Yes,
so,
right.
We'll get there. But
we'll talk about that. With Darren Emerson joining the band, they really did shed kind of all of those new wave and pop elements of the music. In 1994, Underworld released.
You mean basic song structure?
Pop song structure for sure.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. 1994, they released Dub No Bass With My Head Man, which is all one word. And I got to tell you, when I requested that Siri play this album, she did it and she said, playing Dub No Bass With My Head Man. I think she maybe said Dub Knob Bass With My Head Man or something like that. I mean, it was really funny, but she did get it. Like all I had to do was just say, play the Underworld album, Dub No Bass. And she figured out everything after that, which is really impressive.
Good for Siri.
This was called a debut album because of the drastic change of styles. Just did not fit into the original Underworld mold. And used a lot of found material from conversations and other sources. Personally, I do love the two pop albums. And I love Dude Dude. I so far loved the two iterations of Underworld. And I really, really enjoyed their move into basically EDM. I mean, this is electronic dance music.
Okay, as much as you love this album,
yeah,
I kind of struggled with it. Sure. I want to love it like you do. I really do. Sure. I'm not being cynical. I want to see it through your eyes. So how can you help me see it through your eyes?
It just basically requires you can't really compare it to what they'd done before. You can't. It's also music for me that I can't just, you know, lean back in my chair, close my eyes, put on headphones and listen to. I don't know, maybe I could, because it is kind of trancey, but it's more of like a driving in the car. This is great music for driving around the car, or working on other stuff. There's no lyrics to get in the way. You can be writing, you can be typing code. That rhythmic kind of helps with that. But I think that you do have to have a predilection of liking electronic music and EDM prior to this. This feels like the gateway drug into EDM, or the ham and cheese of EDM. Like if you only like a handful of EDM music, Underworld is probably going to be in that list, because they are very, very much pioneers in that realm, but also very straightforward as to what that what EDM kind of sounds like. So if you go into this already not liking EDM, you're probably not going to like Underworld, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it'd be like me saying, Hammond, help me like Mushroom Head. It's, you know, you're not going to point to a thing, a key that unlocks a lock that all of a sudden makes me hear something in there that I didn't hear before.
But like their cover of, to kind of follow with that, to really tie it together,
yeah,
their cover of Rumor Has It has an EDM breakdown for the chorus.
Oh, of a Mushroom Head. I was like, are you kidding me? Yeah. Underworld covered Rumor Has It? Like, about to pull up Google and start scrambling and say, pause the show.
No, but Mushroom Head's cover has this EDM breakdown in it. So it's not like I'm...
It does and it doesn't. I mean, it's ED. It's a really, really coarse and rough EDM with like, with what sounds like hardware. It sounds like
it's like someone dropped a blender off a counter.
Kind of, yeah. Or yeah, that's exactly what it sounds like. A running blender dropped off a counter. So a lot of that machinery is now exposed that was covered by soundproofing plastic. and I do like that. But it's not, but I don't think there's something that's going to make somebody like, a genre that maybe they don't like, you know, with just a few words.
And there are things about this that I liked. I'm not saying that it was just folded my arms, sat in a corner, and pouted.
Right.
There are things I did like. It's just that later you ask a key question.
Oh, I do.
That changed
I can't wait.
You asked a key question of me that I want to bring up, because that really did change the way I felt about it. Yes,
right. And we'll talk about that when we talk about our playlist.
Yeah. Yes. So I'm saying that this was hard, uh-huh, and I don't want to say I thoroughly disenjoyed it.
Right.
But I will say it was a trudge. Most of the time I can sit down and listen to an album,
yeah,
or two back to back and get through them.
You needed something in between these albums. Knows.
Yeah. I needed
palate cleanser.
I was going to say a dance break, but that wouldn't make sense.
It'd be kind of the opposite, yeah.
I needed something different to get kind of reset and erase the kind of shake the Etch-a-Sketch before I went back into it.
Yeah. No, I get it. And I think I don't think that there's anything, there's certainly nothing wrong with that. I mean, if you don't like something, you don't like something. I'm curious, and it did sound like you found elements of things that you liked.
I did. And we'll cover, we'll get there. We're saying that a lot. If you're playing the we'll get there drinking game, you're going to fly.
All right. So, after Dub No Bass with My Head Man, they released Second Toughest in the Infants in 1996. This actually had some commercial success because of its release, coinciding with the release of Trainspotting. The movie used the two songs Dark and Long and Born Slippy, the Nux version,
So Born Slippy was initially released only as a B-side, and it wasn't until it had any success with the movie that they put it on a subsequent release.
And this is one of those examples of when a band's discards, I don't want to call a B-side a discard, but it's, they would have promoted it more had it been, had they considered to be an A-side or a single, turns out to be one of their biggest hits. Cause I would say,
and if Bon Jovi had worked with them, it'd be Born Slippy When Wet.
Or Born Slippy on a Prayer.
With a Runaway.
That's it. Exactly. Did when you heard Born Slippy, did it sound familiar to you? Had you heard it?
It did sound very familiar. Here's another secret I'm going to tell is I've never seen Trainspotting. I've been afraid to
because of the, because you've heard about a specific scene in the movie.
Well, no, it's because having worked with addiction and that kind of stuff for as long as I have, I didn't need that depiction of it in my life. I just felt like it was a little bit too much. And so I've just kind of steered away. I hear it's fantastic. I think that there's been nothing bad said about it. I just don't know if I'm ready to swallow that pill and take it. Kind of like I haven't seen the Joker yet because of the same kind of thing about it being about mental illness and those kind of things. I just don't know if I'm ready to jump into that.
It's a very good point. Because both the movies you describe deal with the things that they center around in very extreme detail. This isn't small or what, big bright lights, big city, you know, where, oh, Michael J. Fox and Joan Jett have a cocaine problem. Oh, well, let's listen to some more music. I mean, it is some pretty severe substance abuse and ramifications from that. And, however, some of it is done in such a really impressive metaphysical scale or representative scale where it's not necessarily, all right, this person's, you know, cranked out in a corner with a tube around their arm, foaming at the mouth. It's more like, oh, what are they experiencing right now? And you're kind of seeing through the way they experience it.
And I respect that. I just don't know if I'm ready to see Obi-Wan Kenobi curled up on it.
Yeah, because that's what you would see. I mean, it is. It is Obi-Wan. Yeah, and be curious if you do end up seeing it, what you think of it, because I think it's a really, really good film. But it is, you know, I'm not going to try and talk you into it being anything than what you expect it to be. Have you seen other addiction movies
it depends on the level of reality and it depends on the kind of outcome of them as well.
Sure.
And the further I got into it, the less likely I am to see them, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, totally. I'm trying to think of a good example. Like, I feel like it's not as depressing as Leaving Las Vegas, if you've seen Leaving Las Vegas.
See, and I think a lot of this has to do with my age and my unwillingness to see things now that are, I don't know, sad or distressing. Yeah. I've had enough of that. I'm ready to sit down and watch a whole lot of dumb reality TV show and sitcoms again, because I've just, my career has led me down some gruesome, sad, dark paths.
Sure.
I'm just ready to watch a whole bunch of MASH reruns.
Give me some happy stuff. Just plug the Disney Plus into my arm and let that be my.
Yeah, really. I mean,
my saline solution.
I have watched the High School Musical series twice, just because it's light and stupid and fun.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I mean, you know what? I think that. That you do what you do, you know? I mean, there's nothing, again, for the same reason that I'm not going to try and make you like Underworld, I'm not going to try and make you watch a movie. Oh no, Trainspotting's so good. You're missing out if you don't see it. I mean, you're going to miss Trainspotting if you don't see Trainspotting. Yeah. And guess what? Life will go on. Life will be fine. And you'll be exactly the same person on the other side of it. On the other side of not seeing it that you would be had you seen it. So I think
it's grown increasingly hard for me to watch movies that have no joy or no hope to them.
Yeah.
And I hear that that's one of those movies, and I hear that Joker's the same way.
I think Leaving Las Vegas has that. I don't feel like Trainspotting has that as much as Leaving Las Vegas. Leaving Las Vegas is probably the most
depressing movie I've seen. And people are out there going to say, oh, Brian, have you seen Blue Valentine? No, I have not seen Blue Valentine.
And I appreciate how good they are. And God bless people who've done it. I've just been in a place work-wise where I've experienced all that firsthand, and I just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah. Well, the good news is there's plenty of other things that are just as good that are not as heavy. So mm-hmm.
a good episode of Fortune Fire makes me just as happy as going to a movie.
Sure. Well, good. All right.
This therapy segment brought to you by Underworld.
Right, exactly. So we were talking about 1996's Second Toughest in the Infants. The album actually showed a growth with the music mixing elements of techno, house, drum and bass, and more. And, you know, those early 1990s, 1994, 1995, 96, were the very early beginnings of what we know now as EDM. There was some stuff before that, obviously, and dance music, of course, has been around, you know, pop and disco and stuff in the 70s and even before that, of course. But it was a lot of those elements of the trance, the house, the repetition, techno that started to become more prevalent this time in the 90s. In 1999, they released Boku Fish because of personal issues within the band. They admitted to working in their own studios and only communicating with mixes of material passed back and forth on DAT. So basically, they went kind of Beatles Abbey Road and then took turns being in the studio individually. I guess Let It Be had a lot of that as well.
Yeah, I can just imagine how slow it was mailing DAT tapes back and forth.
Yeah, well, they might have had a courier or something,
it's one of those things where I'm like, yes, if Dropbox existed, you could do an entire album never talking to anybody. And
yeah, 1999. I mean, obviously, it wouldn't have Dropbox, but ISDN and faster ways of sending stuff over a 14400 modem signal.
I guess. Mailing DAT tapes back and forth is pretty passive aggressive at that point. It wasn't for speed. It was just super passive aggressive.
It was. Yeah, that's why the album just took years and years and years to get released. Also in 1999, they went on a world tour, which was well received, and a CD and DVD were culled from it, called Everything Everything. After the live album tour, Emerson decided to leave the band and follow his own solo projects.
DJ Emerson. He went on to make lots of cheap TVs and DVD players.
I thought you were going to say, went to join Lake and Palmer back in the 70s and do something else. In 2002, the remaining members of the band released 100 Days Off. Even though Emerson had left, the sound of the remaining duo was still very much in the world that they had worked in while he was in the group. A lot of critics felt like there was a little bit of a loss in sound, in style with Emerson and 100 Days Off. I still really like that album. In 2003, they released an anthology called 1992 to 2002. This was the first time that B-sides such as Big Mouth, Spiky, Dirty, and 8-Ball were made available.
All sound like street names for weird, like Sesame Street rappers.
Or 80s action movie gang members.
Members of the Warriors gangs.
That's right. Come out and play, Big Mouth, Spiky, Dirty, and 8-Ball.
So, and you're going to notice a trend with their anthologies coming as we go later. The anthologies are kind of follow a pattern here.
I feel like you should only get to release two anthologies at the most. One is acceptable. Two is even a stretch.
I wonder if every time they release an anthology, they were thinking their career was coming to an end.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, that's when you release one, right?
That might be what it was. They smelled like they saw the light at the end of the tunnel get light brighter and like, oh, we better do an anthology. And then it backed up a little bit. And then maybe, I don't know.
So is there a difference between anthologies and greatest hits these days? Maybe more of a difference back in the day is like anthologies, like a career spanning, here's all of our music kind of thing. And greatest hits are obviously the greatest hits. But are the two synonymous these days? Like if a band released an anthology album, would we just say, okay, well, they're just using a different name for greatest hits?
I think that it would be the same thing unless a band is smart and puts greatest hits on one disc and then all the cool stuff on the second, like the unreleased and demos and alternate takes. And I think anthology is more of the second disc than the first. So it's all the stuff that they haven't gotten out there yet.
I like that. That's a really cool way to divide those up, you know?
I mean, it also makes people want to buy all of it.
Yeah. And boy, it'll come back into play later on in the show. I know we're going to use that, but we actually talked about something that Underworld did that's very much like this. So we'll get to that in a little bit too. But I think these days anthology and greatest hits are synonymous. Yeah. I think that, you know, unfortunately, it'd be nice if we could just say, oh, that's an anthology. Oh, great. It's all their stuff. But I guess not. They embarked on another tour shortly after that, produced another live 3D set called Live in Tokyo. It was sold after the concert in Japan and later sold online. In 2005, two compilations of new music were released titled River Run. They were only released online. A third installment was released in 2006. And then that summer, they released Mysterion's Mix, which was a special retrospective of the River Run tracks. And this was a free download to those who had bought all of the original River Run songs.
So they've added a new word now. There's anthology, greatest hits, and retrospective.
Retrospective. Again, I think interchangeable. Interchangeable. In 2006, a limited edition 12-inch vinyl of River Run was released. And then later on in 2006, they worked with Gabriel Yared to compose the music for the movie Breaking and Entering. In 2007, they released the album Oblivion with Bells. This one had Crocodile as a single. Larry Mullen of U2 helped out on the track Boy, Boy, Boy. A lot of repetition with them. We're going to have more of that. They also worked on the soundtrack to Sunshine, which was a collaboration with composer John Murphy.
And I don't do this often. I've done it a couple times so far this season, but I interviewed John Murphy late last year, and he's phenomenal. If you want to learn more about him.
What's his background music? Like, what is he?
He's done the music for 28 Days Later. He's done the music for Kick-Ass. He did the Sunshine. He's done all kinds of Danny Boyle's movies.
That's cool.
But he also has some phenomenal stories that he told while I was talking to him about being a child and sneaking in and playing guitar for a time with Paul McCartney.
Oh, wow. Jeez, talking about the Holy Grail, right?
Yeah.
Amazing. Underworld has released two series through underworldlive.com in both MP3 and WAVE format. They are the 020202 and the Phone Strap Auto Trader series. They debuted a new song in August of 2009 called Between the Stars. So now we had the CD DVD of the live tour, which was Everything Everything. We've had the track Boy Boy Boy, which was with Larry Mullen of U2. We've had the 020202 release. So
Everything Everything.
That's right. We're getting repetition. In 2010, they released the album Barking. This one had a song. The first single was called Scribble.
Wasn't Repetition a song by Information Society?
It might have been. It's not one I'm familiar with. I know there's an Eternal ballads. Repetition by... Oh, was that a joke?
No. I think it's one of their ballads. They actually did a song called Repetition.
Oh, I thought it might have been... You might have been saying that they're very repetitive as a band.
This is not me. I wasn't casting aspersions on Information Society at all.
We need to do them, I think, as a, because their most recent cover album was
spectacular. Is that the one with capital I on it?
It is. Yeah. It is. Yeah. So good. In August 2010, Rich Smith released a solo album, Bungalow with Stairs, Volume 1. It accompanied What's Going On in Your Head When You're Dancing, an exhibition of paintings by Carl Hyde. The album was available from the band's website and was packaged with the exhibition catalog. And then they reunited with Danny Boyle to write the score for his production of Frankenstein at the Royal National Theater. It was broadcast in 2011, and the soundtrack was also released that year.
So I found the soundtrack in completion on YouTube and listened to it. It was really interesting stuff.
That's cool.
And it was the highlight of Underworld 2.0 for me.
Really? Now, how was it? Was it produced with like an orchestra, or how was it?
It had a lot of electronic elements, but there was a lot of orchestral elements mixed in with it.
Interesting. Oh, that's cool. Really, really, really cool. I'll have to listen for that myself or find that myself. In 2011, they announced two compilations. Yet another term for, well, I guess that's not a great set. A compilation is just a mix of a bunch of different stuff. One was a collection. The other was 1992 to 2012.
So they added, 20 years to the anthology?
Right, exactly.
Or 10 years, 10 years to the anthology.
Right. They were also chosen to direct the music at the 2012 Summer Olympics opening ceremony. And again, they worked with Danny Boyle on that.
Yeah, their relationship.
And also in 20.
I was going to say their relationship with Danny Boyle must be pretty good because he seems to really like using them.
Yeah, for sure. Great combination too. Mm-hmm. Underworld and Danny Boyle. They won the 2012 Q Award from Q Magazine for innovation in sound
for the opening ceremonies.
Oh, that was for the Olympics. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. In 2013, we saw the solo release of Carl Hyde's debut album, Edgeland. He then worked with Brian Eno to release two albums, Someday World and High Life. And then back over to Rick Smith. He did the soundtrack to Trance, another Danny Boyle project, and the score of the 2014 TV drama, Babylon. At this point, they made plans to remaster and release expanded editions of all their albums over the next few years. And I did, when I was going through this, instead of going through my copies of Boku Fish and Second Toughest in the Infants and Dub No Bass, I listened to the expanded editions, which had a lot of great additional stuff. In 2016, they released Barbara, Barbara, We Face a Shining Future. This earned them a Grammy nomination for Best Dance Electronic Album. And after touring, they worked one more time with Danny Boyle for the score to T2, which was not the Terminator sequel, but the Trainspotting sequel.
Yeah, Danny should have picked a different title.
You think? I still haven't seen this. It just reminded me that it was on my list when it came out, and I never ended up seeing it. So now I need to add it to my list.
Yeah, I've never seen it either. You'd think with T2 that he would have realized that that's pretty much synonymous with the movie from 1992.
For sure.
And trying to usurp that back is not going to happen.
You can't go, I'll be back with the Trainspotting sequel and use T2. Thank you very much. In 2018, they announced a project called World of Underworld. It's a project that involves reimagining their past work and experimenting with new music.
One of the projects they did with this was an EP they did with Iggy Pop called Tea Time Dub Encounters.
And yeah, I listened to that today, and it was really, really good. There's a song on there called Get Your Shirt. And if you check it out, so it's vocals. So it's, you know, Iggy Pop on vocals changes up the sound of Underworld quite a bit. But there's a great video that goes along with it that's kind of like a Funhouse Mirror dance video. Really cool.
Cool.
And then last year in 2019, they released Basically, they did a year-long experimental music and video project where they released one new song every week for 52 weeks. And then at the end of that, they released a couple different versions of the music. One was the Drift Sampler, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. And that just has the 10 or 12 best tracks from Drift. And then they released a 4-disc version, which had 40 of the 52 tracks on it as well. And that was more of a wider collection. The first disc of that, by the way, I think is the same version as the highlights. So you can, it's kind of like what we were talking about the greatest hits being disc one and then the rest of the anthology being the remaining albums. But Jonathan Colton did the same kind of thing with Sing a Week, mm-hmm. where he released one new song a week for 52 weeks.
Didn't Lynn Peralta do the same thing with Art?
He did. He did based on Colton's Things a Week. Lynn Peralta did a piece of art that referenced each of Jonathan Colton's songs, one a week for a week. It's cool. I think it's really cool. It's, you know, it's like, what's the NaNoWriMo where you take the entirety of November and write more by writing a little bit every day, a certain number of words every day.
And I've learned that December is the editing month and January is the drinking month. That way you can be a real writer. Yeah, that way you can be a real writer.
Excellent. Wow. Well, I don't see you taking the latter. I do see you doing a lot of the former. All right. Well, that covers us with Underworld's library. Tell us about their statistics and general notes.
So Born Slippy has sold over 1 million copies and has been remixed and put into compilations and mashups and all kinds of things. It keeps popping up in popular culture. In the disco scene in the movie Vanilla Sky, it features their song Rez, which made me realize I've seen Vanilla Sky, but I can't remember Vanilla Sky. So I have no idea. Like, I remember distinctively sitting down and watching Vanilla Sky, but I get it and Magnolia mixed up in my head.
The same thing happened to Tom Cruise in Vanilla Sky. you know what? I think both of those movies are really good. I love Magnolia. That's one of my favorites because of these weird disparate stories and some great acting. Julianne Moore and John C. Reilly. And,
is there a way they could be in the same universe? Cause I feel like they're very similar in my brain.
For whatever reason, Vanilla Sky feels like a future sci-fi thing to me, even though only a couple elements of it are future sci-fi thing, future sci-fi. Magnolia is present day with a bunch of frogs that land on people.
Right. I remember that. That's the one with the,
you remember the frogs?
Yeah. I remember the frogs and I remember the, Tom Cruise bits in that are pretty funny.
Oh geez. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. I forgot the time. It's funny because that's such an ensemble film. I actually sometimes forget that Tom Cruise was in that and I totally did. Now, if that's the same world, there you go. That would fit because he's kind of a jerk through part of Vanilla Sky. See? So
that's what I'm saying.
I can see the parallels now. I didn't before, but now I do.
And the last thing for them is they are cited by tons and tons of video game composers and modern day composers as an influence that they have found inspiration from the work of Underworld over the course of their careers.
I can see why. I mean, the song Rez itself feels like it's a level in the game Lumines or Lumines. Mm-hmm. I think it's pronounced Lumines, which is really, really cool handheld game. They made it for originally for PlayStation, if I remember correctly. And then Switch now has it. You can get it on iOS. It's great. I love that. Love that game. And it feels like Rez belongs in that thing. All right. Well, let's say that you go see Underworld in concert. You're not going to leave the concert until they play that one specific song. You know, the one that they have to play before they can leave. What are our choices for their Stairway to Heaven song?
All right. So I leaned into old music because that's where my heart is with these guys.
Sure.
And so I picked Under the Radar, Stand Up, which was their biggest hit on the charts. Then I picked Born Slippy because it's the one that got noticed in the movie. And then Dark and Long and Cowgirl I threw on. I picked Underneath the Radar, but then I read Brian's note. And
yep, and I'd say Born Slippy. Because, I mean, since 1.0, they've attracted such a different audience that I bet they've toured more for their 2.0 sound than they ever did for their 1.0 sound. I bet you they don't play any of their 1.0 stuff in concert.
Thing you've said in months to me. And I feel like retracting my pick because of that, but because my heart is with Underneath the Radar, I'm staying there.
Oh, okay, please do. And what, I haven't said anything more valid to you than that in the last several months? In recording America's Next Top Podcaster, that was the most valid thing I've said?
It was one of the things I read that, and I'm like, man, I just kind of devalued the entire thing about Under the Radar.
Okay. All right. Pulling up setlist.fm, and sure enough, Born Slippy, the Nux release of that song. It's funny because I see Born Slippy Nux, but it's not like they have another version of Born Slippy on this, but they have released other versions of Born Slippy. And I'm curious to see the remaining 10, by the way: King of Snake, 2 months Off, Dark and Long, Jumbo, Rez, Cowgirl, Pearl's Girl, Moaner, Push Upstairs. Oh yeah, it's such a great song. Cowgirl on its own. And then I'm curious to see how far I have to go down here before I see...
I bet you Underneath the Radar is maybe top 20 now based on what I'm seeing.
I'm already down at 48, oh my gosh. And I'm not seeing anything yet.
I haven't been this wrong in ages.
93. Here we go. Underneath the Radar, God's Song, Pray, Glory, Glory, all their stuff. Oh, here we go. Rubber Ball was Underworld 1.0. That is tied for 87. Yep. I'm looking to see if there's anything else. Yeah, Change the Weather is under 111. Where did I say? Did I say Stand Up? There it is, tied 102. It's just the fact that they didn't record a lot or didn't tour a lot with this sort of thing.
No, but yeah, I haven't been this wrong in ages. I don't think I've ever been more than 10 off.
Right, I know. Yeah, usually you do have it nailed, but... I'm looking to see. I mean, I was really hoping I'd see Doot Doot in here somewhere.
Under their covers, maybe?
Oh, there we go. Yeah, 125. They've actually only done Doot Doot in concert twice. And I'm sure it was during the Underworld 1.0 touring days.
You hope.
I hope. You know, I'm curious. If we look at their one concert that they did in 1986... Where is it here? Oh, they don't have the set list. Darn.
So this is what, but I'm based on what you're going to say next, this is why I say you hope that it was only in 1.0.
Right. Yes, exactly. Otherwise, that devalues everything that I say in the next segment, which is, who would we like to hear them cover? We pick a song that we'd like to hear this band cover and do in their own style. And I'm actually... you can call it a cheat, but I'm picking Doot Doot by Frewer because I would love to hear what Underworld 2.0 does with it. They're such a different, they're the same people or a couple of the same people, but they're such a different band than they were when they were Frewer. And I think I'd love to hear them revisit the song with their new EDM sensibilities, maybe as part of that whole world of Underworld, which I looked up to see if what they've done. They've only released one track as part of that World of Underworld series. So get back in there, Carl, and do a cover of Doot Doot and bring my request to fruition.
Shoot him an email. Yes. No, shoot him an email. See what he says. What's the worst he's going to say is no.
The worst he's going to say is nothing.
Yeah.
Because my email doesn't make it even to them. No, the worst thing he says is, what a horrible idea. I'm not going to do that. Push it upstairs. That's what he's going to say. How about you? What would you like to hear them cover?
Okay, so I, again, my heart is with Beta and 1.0. And
sure.
I would like to hear them do Too Late for Goodbyes by Julian Lennon.
Oh, that's great.
This is a great song that would work in either style of the group, I think. But I really think version one is where it'd be the best. And it was what I was thinking about when I came up with this song. And because they're almost like version 1.0 is almost a contemporary of when Julian was kind of doing stuff. So it'd be totally. Nice. It would be nice to see what they could do with this song.
Oh, dude, that's a great pick. That's a song that I haven't heard or thought about in years, and I'd forgotten how much I liked it. And really, when you look back, obviously there was the whole comparison, like, oh, wow, Julian sounds so much like his dad and blah, blah, blah. It went over the fact that that was a really well-crafted pop song.
Mm-hmm,
I know Valot was like the first big hit that he came out with, but this one was such a well-crafted pop song.
Mm-hmm. I really love the song, and I'm glad that it crossed my bandwidth enough for me to think about it for this, because I hadn't thought about the song in years either, but for some reason it popped in and I'm like, this would fit.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. That's great. That's a good choice. All right, now we get to our playlist. This is where we each pick five songs that when added to the anthology or the greatest hits or the compilation or the retrospective, give you a great complete sound of the band. I'm going to start here as I always do. And I'm going to start with, again, you know, if I used it as a cheat before, I'm going to use it as a cheat now. Doot Doot by Frewer. Again, it was kind of a hit in the UK, although because there was never a Frewer greatest hits, I feel like I can use this safely. It's just such an infectious song, and I feel like it gives us more foreshadowing to the Underworld 2.0 sound than the 1.0 sound. I feel like it's almost like got some EDM DNA in there, which is almost a palindrome. the next one is I'm doing this as a double because after I listened to this album, I decided I was going to go back and re-rip the CD and join those two tracks together because one blends right into the other. Bright White Flame and Pray from Under the Radar. This is, of course, Underworld 1.0. I forgot how much I love these songs, one right after the other. It is the perfect consecutive pair. And one's an up-tempo, the other one is a very slow ballad, and they're just so good together that I can't imagine listening to one and not going into the other. It's like Tainted Love going into Where Did Our Love Go, or Need You Tonight going into Mediate on NXS. It's a pair of songs that need to be played together. The third one for me is Cowgirl. They've talked about it a little bit in their Stairway to Heaven list. This is from the Dub No Bass album. It's just a really, really smooth, cool EDM song. And this is this list, by the way, is very much consecutive order, is a chronological order, I should say. And Cowgirl was one of the first Underworld 2.0 songs that I found myself really liking. Because I did the same, you know, I did probably what you might have done had you not steered away from them. As soon after Under the Radar came out, and Change the Weather. I saw, oh, a new album from Underworld. Great. And I went and bought it and I said, whoa, this is different. But then I heard Cowgirl and I ended up really liking it. And I've been a fan ever since. The next one is from the Barking album called Moon and Water. And as much as I was following Underworld and buying their albums, Barking was an album that I never knew about, never picked up. So I didn't listen to it until this time around for Soundography. And it's beautiful, Moon and Water. And it's really especially amazing when this is an EDM track. And I think that it's this gorgeous. You don't usually hear gorgeous and EDM in the same sentence, but this is just a gorgeous EDM track.
And I'm going to, maybe it might take away from it a little bit, but was this after they already started working with doing scores? Because maybe that had an effect on it.
Certainly could have had an effect on it. Yeah, and for me, it doesn't take any effect away from it. Look at the stuff that Danny Elfman had already been doing, some movie score stuff. Well, I mean, they did Forbidden Zone prior to even being Oingo Boingo, but Danny Elfman's movie score stuff overlapped the Oingo Boingo library, and there was definitely some influence in there, and I feel like Oingo Boingo only grew because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Last one is a song called I Exhale. It's the first track on Barbara Barbara. And it wasn't until the second time that I listened to the song that it really got its hooks into me. And it's got this rockin' driving beat. And then these vocals that really could just turn this into a Damon Albarn, Blur, or Gorillaz song. This is something that could have been on, yeah, probably more Gorillaz than Blur, but it feels like it's something that could have been on that first Gorillaz album, alongside Clint Eastwood and 12-2000 and stuff like that. Really, really cool, cool track, I Exhale, from Barbara Barbara. All right, let's get to your playlist, Hammond.
All right, so do we want to do this now, or do you want to go for the first two and then we can go get into it?
Let's rip the Band-Aid off. Let's talk about your playlist, because I'm trying to remember what sparked the conversation that we had. I think I saw, you know, you'd put five songs in there and then you'd added some notes to the side that says, that said something like, I'm really just not a fan of their later stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I think we had even talked right around that time after I saw those notes. And I said, you know, if you don't like it, if you wouldn't listen to it outside of Soundography, then I don't feel like it should be, you shouldn't have to force something in your playlist that you wouldn't listen to outside of your making your playlist.
Yeah. And that actually helped a lot because I want to recommend music, and the songs I picked, I genuinely, I won't even say it, I liked them. I didn't love them. Yeah. It wasn't just a mild toleration. I actually, I did like the ones I picked, but when you put it in that context, it really helped justify the fact that I would much rather recommend songs from any of the other 1.0 and Beta album before I put these in. But I felt obligated because, I mean, we're supposed to give up a kind of a balanced view of this and,
for sure,
and an open-minded
for sure.
view. And I wanted to be open-minded, but when you made that, you kind of gave me the permission to say, you know what? They made the list and I'm going to keep them on the Spotify list because they did make my list.
Of course.
But
of course.
They're not something I'm going to recommend verbally because I would much rather have them listen to all of Under the Radar before they listen to any of the newer stuff, in my opinion.
Right. Right. Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely valid. I'm trying to think of an example of where I know I've done playlists where I've said, I really only had three songs that I liked. And so I'm just doing three. Mm-hmm. Just as much as we've said, I had six that I absolutely loved, and I had to include six songs. I kind of did that this time.
I think I've done that more often than you, because like on level 42, sure.
That's right. Yeah, you had a hard time.
On level 42, I put 5 songs down and you were like on 3 of them were like, this was mine, this was mine, this was mine. So as we went through, I just let you have them because I
oh really?
You had 8 for level 42 and I had 3.
That's right. I think so. All right, cool. Well, fair enough. But I think that that is a you know, that is a baseline for both of us, that if I just went back through and even looked at stuff like Third Eye Blind and Reba McEntire. And if I don't feel like I could listen to those 5 songs outside of this show and creating the playlist, like if I've got my playlist that I have in iTunes, I got the hundreds of them, mm-hmm. right? And if I don't feel like I would put Reba McEntire's 5 songs that I picked or Third Eye Blind's 5 songs that I picked, here's a hint, a couple of them are covers. A lot of them are covers.
Yeah.
then I wouldn't include them. And I'd just say, yeah, I only had 4 songs that I really liked this week, or 2 songs, or I couldn't find anything that I liked about this.
I actually think your cover, the cover play actually helps cover up on bands that you don't like as much as others, because you're able to find them at least saying, here's a genuine cover. I liked the song initially, and they dipped it in themselves.
Right. They kept it in their style, and I can appreciate that. And I would listen to this song again because of that.
Yeah.
If it's a band I don't like, I mean, there's some screamy Cookie Monster vocal stuff that Tristan listens to that if we were ever to do for Soundography, I'd say, yeah, there won't be a playlist for me this week because I could not wait for this week to end.
Yep, hard pass.
I'm now in the hospital because I shoved ice picks in my ears to stop the sensation of listening to their music.
And I don't know if we'd ever go that screamy unless someone told us to as a patron. And even then, we'd probably veto power to negotiate.
You realize you just put that out there that for $50 so that he could make us listen to.
But you know what we could do is negotiate it down to 30 and have it just be 1 album.
We'll give you a $20 bill back and let you pick 1 album and we'll do it. We'll listen. That's funny. All right. Well, let's get to your redacted playlist.
So number 1, I picked Underneath the Radar. This was the first song of theirs I heard. I bought the single. I have put it on mixtapes. It's been on my phone since I got a phone. It has been with me in some way or another since the time I first heard it and saw the video on MTV.
By the way, I went back. I never saw the video, and I went back and watched the video for that song this week for doing this. And man, is it hokey?
Oh yeah, no. I just remember. I haven't watched it in years, but I just remember how Spartan it was with the TV and the empty room. That's kind of all I remember.
Yeah, it's just them dancing around an empty room. However, you go back if you look at a song that was released 3 years ago, I Exhale. I decided, oh, is there a video for that one? Oh, there is. Let's watch it. And it's really, I think it's 3 minutes of Carl Hyde playing with a door. I think that's all it is, because I only was able to watch the middle 30 seconds of it. And I wasn't about to say, oh, well, let's go and see if I can find the full video on YouTube.
So
nope, I guess you're 30 seconds of Carl Hyde playing with the door. And that was as much as I
could. So was it like under the door, like a cat would, or like, is it him standing there just swinging open and closed?
It's swinging open and closed, but he's doing other things with it. Like here, he's standing behind the door and putting his arms around the front of it. Here, he's opening the door rhythmically and shoving his hand out through the opening and then pulling it back before he slams the door again. And then here's him standing in the front of the door, wiggling his head back and forth.
All right.
I like talking about it more than I like watching it.
So I know it's a hit technically, even though it ranked 100 and whatever on their list, it's still in many ways a hit because it was everyone's gateway to Underworld.
Sure.
And so I love it. And I claimed it. I think I claimed it long before we even got to This Week on the Notes.
Oh, you did. As soon as you created that page, you said, I'm taking it, which is totally fine with me.
And all then, yours. And then the next one I picked was Change the Weather. This fool in tears on his stupid knees. You treat me like which I found to be just a really, really cool song. And that's the thing that stood out with the 1.0 stuff is those two albums. There's just some really, really good songs, which led to me picking Too Late for Goodbyes as my cover because they know how to write good pop songs. They're good pop song artists.
They do.
Yeah. And which makes 2.0 perplexing to me in many ways, but also it lets me realize that they're not going to just stay where they are. They're going to challenge themselves creatively as artists. And I respect that and admire that because it's risky and you lose some people. Like as a fan, first two albums I'm in, next one, they kind of lost me because of it's not my thing. And that takes balls to do.
It does, you know, right. Because, I mean, they were on a trajectory of like, all right, well, we could continue down this pop train. We'd have the fans that we gain through this, but it's not the music we want to do. I'm trying to think of another good example of a band that changed that drastically between albums. I guess U2 kind of did that when they did the Zootopia stuff.
Yeah,
but not Zootopia.
But it wasn't Zooropa. It wasn't as dramatic as this. Yeah, it felt like a change. It felt like a change in production style, not in musical style.
Yeah, but boy, were people upset. Oh. I mean, they lost so many fans who said, "Oh, I'm done with U2 after this."
Yeah, you know,
who knows how many of them actually came back?
Yeah, you know, they almost all of them came back because that was a great album. No matter how you slice it, that was a great album.
It was a good album, but Rattle and Hum right before it was so much better.
It was.
Yeah,
it was. So here's where officially my list comes to an end, but I will throw out that I picked Dirty Epic from Dub Knob Ass.
Dub Knob Ass.
I liked it. And this is sad because I liked it because it sounded like a lot like Art of Noise. It's comparison to Art of Noise that made me like it, which kind of disqualifies it in my opinion, because it sounded more like Art of Noise. So
sure.
And then I picked Air Towel. And this one really stood out amongst all the noise. And I put that. Mm-hmm. And then the vocals added some interest. And the fact that I'm not saying anything other than that lets you know that it was kind of a half-assed pick.
It's kind of like that that grape flavoring that makes the coffee medicine drinkable.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
And then I picked Mo Move from 100 Days, and my comment to that is super snarky because I have the app that made that song on my iPad.
I'd like to see you try, Hammond.
I wish I had my iPad down here. I would pull it out.
Do it live.
Yeah, I'd do it right here. But it's an app that has a kind of a modular synth built into it. And you hit play, yeah, and it makes all the same squeaky noises. And again, God bless them for having the stones to take the leap into 2.0.
Yeah.
But I am not able to hang on for the entire ride with the same kind of gusto I wish I could.
Sure. Well, you know, it's okay. Again, like I said, with movies, there's plenty of other stuff out there that's good that you're not, this is not the only thing that's good out there. So it's not like, oh man, you're so missing out if you don't like this because there's nothing else that's good to like.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing is I know there are some obstacles for you coming up later in the season.
Yeah, there will be.
So I'm looking,
have been in the past.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to being the bigger man on the other end of this and helping you through your obstacles.
I know I have to go look at the list to see what you might be referring to.
Let me think of two right off the top of the list.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That's one of them.
Yeah.
And then down at the bottom.
Oh God. Yeah. Actually, this I'm going to really enjoy, especially boy here. There's a good example right there. Trent Reznor, right? I mean, the Nine Inch Nails stuff, but somewhat different from the score work that he's been doing, the soundtrack work.
And his score work has matured. His first one sounded like instrumental Nine Inch Nails. Now he's doing far more intricate and intelligent things.
Yeah, totally true. All right, cool. Well, that's coming up. There's a little tease coming up later in the season. In a minute, I'll tell you what's coming up next week. But in the meantime, we want to hear from you. I do tell them about what's coming up next episode, don't I?
Yep.
Next episode is 1979. Yes, every season we do an episode that focuses on 1 year in music, and we create a playlist that's based on that, a 10-track playlist based on that. So look forward to that coming up, and we'll talk about some of the music highlights.
So should I use the Smashing Pumpkins song as our theme song next week?
Oh, as our theme song?
Yeah.
Sure. I don't think we legally can use that as the theme song. But okay. Anyway, 1979 coming up on the next episode of Soundography. In the meantime, we want to hear from you. Email us, soundographypodcast@gmail.com is the email address to use. You can follow us on Twitter. I'd like to hear, I'm sure other people have ideas about bands that really changed their sound dramatically between two albums, you know, and have a 1.0 and a 2.0, because I know there's some that we're totally forgetting about. Tweet us at the Soundography. For everything else, we're at soundography.com. For every episode, you'll find our playlists, a Spotify link with our playlists, as well as a link to Amazon where you can buy a recommended album from each band. You can also support the show by going to Patreon. So many great levels. If you are a casual fan and just want to throw us a few bucks a month, we love you for that. If you are a super fan and you want to make us listen to the entire catalog of any band, well, you can just about do that. We have a little bit of veto power, but you can just about do that at patreon.com. And I think if we do veto, we do either give you the option of choosing something else or we refund your money.
Yeah, we're not just going to go tough and keep it.
Exactly. That'd be the jerkiest thing ever. But we've never vetoed. We haven't vetoed anything yet. So we're great at expanding our minds to new kinds of music. So
admittedly, Brian's probably better at it than I am.
We'll see.
As we've been proven today.
Right. That is patreon.com/soundography. And of course, if you want to leave us reviews wherever you get your podcasts, we'd love to hear them, especially if they're good, positive, and cheerful and 5-star reviews. Boy, we love those. If you don't like us, then maybe just write an email to us and tell us what you don't like about us, or move along to something else. Go and leave your reviews wherever you get your podcasts. And I guess that's going to do it. Anything else, Hammond, that I forgot?
No, it's just that I feel awkward closing this out this way, because I usually am far more, hey, this is fine, let's do it, with the music. But this time I'm having a hard time closing up.
That's okay. It's totally fine. I enjoyed enough for both of us. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Ibbett saying we'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
The show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.